Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
And welcome. Thank you for joining us today. The next 2 hours are devoted to learning something more, not just about the world of shoes and ships and sealing wax, but about how, what, and why we believe as we do. A time for the open-minded, willing to challenge some of those old ideas behind what we think we know and who we might become. In today's episode, we're going to once again examine how we break through self-imposed limitations. Limitations that hold us back, keeping us stuck, when there is so much more that we want to experience in our lives. We will continue the questions, who we are, where we want to be, and how we can go about accomplishing that objective. And once more, we'll use the real-life story of a famous and successful person to help us map our path. So the question, how did I get where I am and how do I get where I want to be, becomes our central inquiry in this episode of Breaking Limitations. I'm Eldon Taylor, and this is a Provocative Enlightenment Special Investigation. All right, our chat room is open, and my partner Ravinder awaits you there now. You can log on by going to provocativeenlightenment.com/chat. Okay, Rav, it's time for you to tell us all about your chat room and why everyone should join you there.
Well, you should come join us in the chat room because we have a great group of people and they provide an extra dimension to the radio show itself. So if you've got questions, you can put them up in the chat room and we will often post them and get them on the air. But if we can't get them on the air, there'll be someone there who's got some really insightful answers. So do come join us. That is provocativeenlightenment.com/chat. That page also has additional information about the guest and any links or anything that we've mentioned on the air will be posted on that page, and any special offers as well. So do come join us. Come and say hello.
All right. In our spotlight of the week, we look back on what has been labeled as the most dangerous ads ever to appear. Quoting from a piece titled, What Were We Thinking? Quote, often the criticism of vintage ads focuses on their inherent sexism, racism, or other displays of social prejudices, which we find laughable today despite their continued presence. But what about the ads that steered consumers into dangerous territory, espousing outmoded scientific evidence or misleading half-truths to convince people that appalling toxic products, or even deadly ones, were actually good for them? Close quote. All right, what were those ads? Well, now imagine an ad that touts DDT as good for me. I mean, do you believe that? DDT is good for me? DDT? All right. Or how about the Dutch Boys lead paint ad that promoted putting lead paint in your children's environment? This ad is sometimes referred to as the Let Them Eat Lead ad. Then there are those ad campaigns promoting junk food like donuts as now laced with vitamins. This vein of advertising, used by many, is thought of as the new way to get them their vitamins. Next, we have the seven...
I'd like that one. Get my vitamins in a donut.
Sure.
Better than those horse pills.
So you're going to hand... This is to your kids. You're going to hand them all this?
No, okay. I'll keep them for me.
Next, we have the 7-Up ad. Excuse me. I'm having trouble with some of this. Inviting mothers to feed their newborns 7-Up. Quote, the ad copy read, a little trick that makes a treat, put 7-Up in the milk. Close quote. I mean, who would believe that? All right, but now wait a minute. This next one actually got me. Cigarettes, just what the doctor ordered. You know, we have a doctor today. Maybe we can ask him about just what the doctor's ordered. Doctor-endorsed cigarette ads were common in the 50s. In fact, in 1953, the brand I personally started smoking, Chesterfield, advertised for 3 years that the science now knew that there was, quote, no adverse effects, close quote, to smoking Chesterfield. Well, you know, Chesterfield King, that's where I started. Now there are more ads listed in the worst of all time, but this brief introduction definitely provides some insight as to whether or not you can trust those doctors in television commercials, to say nothing of what you can believe by way of advertising in general. So Ravinder, you have just finished editing my newest book, to be released in 2014, Gotcha, The Subordination of Free Will. And I address advertising and a host of other public lies and propaganda. So what do you think? Can we trust the ads, the infomercials, and for that matter, even the video news releases the government gives us?
No. That's one simple answer right there. You know, it's amusing looking back and seeing the old ads. They're funny. But you know what? In a few years' time, we'll be looking back at the ads that are on the air right now.
You don't have to wait a few years. You could look at a lot of them out there right now and see that they are fallacious.
They are. Once you start to pay attention to them and discern them, you know, You have to be judging everything. You cannot sit there like a vacuum sucking it all in, because no, I mean, I've come to the conclusion there's no such thing as an expert. Every expert says something stupid. Some of the things experts have recommended just dumbfound me. Absolutely. So no, I think the most important thing you can do is learn how to think. And you're not going to learn that through the schools, because they don't teach you how to think. They teach you to follow the rules and conform and give the right answers.
Core memory work.
Yeah.
Amen, amen. All right. Every week I read some of your letters as our way of paying respect to the very important role you play in making this show successful. Last week our guest was Sandra Ann Taylor. Jeremy wrote, "I love your show. I have heard you address the so-called secret before, and I have not always agreed with you. However, after listening to how you and Sandra explained it this week, I now know why it hasn't always worked for me. You said it when you paraphrased her comment. You must passionately love the process before you can realize the outcome. I so love that. Thank you." You and I both commented on that because I have blasted the secret over and over and over. That was really a pretty insightful remark. You know, you can't just imagine or visualize yourself behind that big desk, you know, with whatever, those secretaries. And you have to be excited about the whole process. You have to see the process. And in doing that, you begin to do the process. And that's how you get there. It isn't a matter. Yeah, anyway, vision boards, whatever. Delphine wrote, "I listen to Provocative Enlightenment all the time. I love Eldon's approach to the topics he selects." Diane wrote, "Dear Eldon and Ravinder, among the things that keep the light shining in my life is listening to Provocative Enlightenment. I was especially thrilled when you interviewed Tara Brock, as she was directly responsible nearly 4 years ago for my being able to crawl out of the snags of grief following the death of my life partner of nearly 30 years. Her words enabled me to live within the absence of presence and find joy there. And this week, I so much enjoyed your chat with Sandra Taylor, another brilliant mind and spirit whose work I so much respect. And equally stimulating were Gary Renard and Joan Borisenko. I enjoy all your shows and am so pleased that you've gone to 2 hours. Even that passes lightning fast. Your show is among the very few that provide the kind of mature, sensible, yet enlightening discussions that are worth listening to again and again. I'm reading your book, Choices and Illusions, and I'm giving copies of it as Christmas presents to my nieces and nephews. Keep up the good work, and thank you both so much for all that you do." Well, thank you, Diane. We appreciate your comments and support. That's a nice letter, isn't it, Rev?
It most certainly is.
It makes you feel good about what we do, doesn't it?
It does.
Nell wrote, "Eldon Taylor is an icon in the subliminal field. He has helped so many people." Nicole wrote, "My website is about spreading the word of self-development and self-improvement. I find your way of communicating direct, educated, and elegant. It is a pleasure to hear you speak." Allison wrote, "I tell my friends that your show isn't for everyone." No, your show is only for those who are unafraid to look long and hard at what and why they think the way they do. Thank you for daring to ruffle feathers and go against the grain if necessary to get to the factual and the practical. Now, Laurent wrote from France regarding the French version of my book, Self-Hypnosis and Subliminal Technology. Quote, I'm starting to dig this world as a rational guy, scientific. I did not really believe in the possibilities until I tried the auto-hypnosis suggestions from Taylor." Close quote. Now, if you haven't yet tried, why wait any longer? All of my books are on sale today at both Amazon and Barnes & Noble. I was really surprised at some of the prices. I mean, so get your copy today. All right, flashing back to last week's show for a moment and my new book, Gotcha. Elaine wrote, "I am interested to see what more Eldon reveals in his new book, but his past books and my past experience indicate that our society is under the influence of a mighty mind-bending spell of fear, which makes even those who feel the most financially secure worried. I just saw a thing about a vision someone had had of future riots in this country, with placards that read, 'Give us our entitlements.' Eerie." Celestial B posted this in response to Elaine. "Double-edged sword. Make folks dependent on the government, and then when it cannot deliver, wham. Drop the martial law hammer and ta-da. Some form of ism that means serious lack of freedom." Well, again, Rav, going to the hard data, some 550 pages that you just edited and got you, do you have any thoughts on this? I mean, do you think martial law and whatnot is even possible?
You know, after what I have read, I have discovered anything is possible. In fact, a whole lot more than that. They've been doing a whole lot worse in smaller scales. And yeah, it is. You know, these things just keep on happening and we hear about it. That was the most fascinating part of your book to me, is that most of the information had come across my radar at some time. And people get all upset about it and then it goes away and it becomes the new norm. You know, it's a crazy world we live in.
Amen. Although I think this last week we took a step forward when a federal judge ruled that NSA was doing was unconstitutional, was spying on all of our phones. All right. Okay, that's all the time I'm going to take for letters today, but I do invite you to opine by sending your email to Eldon@EldonTaylor.com or by joining me on Facebook. We can't get all of your letters on the air, but they do impact our programming. And once again, I both appreciate and thank you for your feedback and continued support. Now, if you're new to this show, you may enjoy our archives. You can find more than 5 years of archives at our site, provocativeenlightenment.com. During that time, we've interviewed Hollywood greats, politicians, psychics, CIA personnel, heart scientists, religious leaders, skeptics, philosophers, social psychologists, best-selling authors, channels, mediums, and more. We have charted the waters of health and wellness, parapsychology, psychic phenomena, UFOs, NDEs, energy medicine, physics, psychology, criminology, history, neuromarketing, brainwashing, and still more. If any of that sounds like your kind of radio, check out the archives again at provocativeenlightenment.com. Be sure to subscribe to our free newsletter while you're there. Okay, now to this week's show, a special episode of our Breaking Limitations series. Breaking Limitations was originally designed to be a telecourse or webinar, but the interest was so keen that we decided to make it available as a worldwide radio broadcast. Provocative Enlightenment is a syndicated show and airs on many networks. For more information about that, please visit provocativeenlightenment.com. All right, this week's special episode of Breaking Limitations features Dr. Norman Shealy, and he is indeed an exceptional leader, teacher, and true icon. C. Norman Shealy, MD, PhD, is president of Holos Institute of Health, Incorporated, a 501c3 organization focusing on holistic research and education. He was founding president of the American Holistic Medical Association in 1978. He was founding president of Holos University Graduate Seminary and is now professor emeritus of energy medicine. He has 12 patents in the field of energy medicine, has published 28 books and over 300 articles. Dr. Shealy began using acupuncture in 1966 and added electrical stimulation to the needles then. Dr. Shealy's innovations include dorsal column stimulation, transcutaneous electrical nerve, or the Rejuva matrix for rejuvenating telomeres. the tips of DNA responsible for health and longevity. He's discovered 5 circuits in the human body which selectively raise DHEA, aldosterone, I'll get that said, neurotensin, oxytocin, or calcitonin, or lower free radicals. His most recent discovery is a blend of essential oils which can activate these circuits. For instance, I have used his Air Bliss for performance anxiety and is by far the fastest and easiest way to reduce stress. It is also designed to help recover from depression and anxiety. It is available at normshealy.com, as is his free weekly e-newsletter. Now, Dr. Shealy has been a guest on Provocative Enlightenment before, and he's already informed my office of his 3 most important songs. Here is his first.
While I give to you, and you give to me, true love, true love, so on, it'll always be, true love, true love, for you and I.
Bing Crosby. Okay, on that, let's get him in here. Welcome back to Provocative Enlightenment, Dr. Norman Shealy.
Oh, Elvin, wow, that one is a tearjerker for me.
Well, tell us about it. Why that song, sir?
Well, I think, when I met my wife, that might have been playing. And so it's always her favorite.
How cool. How cool. I have one like that, too. Yeah. Well, it's been a while. How have you been, and what have you been up to?
Well, it's interesting, Elvin. I'm still doing a lot of research, and I'm in a new project right now. But probably the most fascinating thing that's happened since we last talked is, I submitted my research on 3 different aspects of the use of these oils,
mm-hmm.
and it was turned down immediately because I talked about application of essential oil. So I said for many years, you could probably have sex in public square if you knew what to call it.
Right.
So back in July, I changed the name to transcutaneous acupuncture. Same abstracts that were turned down before immediately accepted. So I gave a presentation at the Southern Medical Association. I gave it a presentation at the Society of Free Radicals in Biology and Medicine. And I've been invited to speak to the local county medical society about transcutaneous acupuncture, which is an acceptable scientific term.
I was just reading today a criticism of Osham's work, and in the criticism, it quoted him. He says, if a phenomena is difficult to measure or does not fit into any of the emerging disciplines, it is excluded from investigation. And the skeptic says, this is absolutely not true. Now, I'll quote, no phenomena that is shown to exist is ever excluded from scientific investigation. And that's clearly just nonsense, just pure nonsense, isn't it, sir?
Well, it's been nonsense for at least 500 years.
Yep.
Introducing new concepts is controversial. When William Harvey described the circulation of blood, he was absolutely crucified by the medical
right.
profession.
Right.
And, of course, eventually became a saint, in a sense, and now they have an annual lecture in his honor. But there have been, every time a major change is introduced, it doesn't matter whether it's medicine or politics or education, it is usually rejected.
Right.
Initially, and eventually accepted.
Yeah, that's Kuhn's whole point about paradigm shifts. Now, you had a new book that was due out this fall, and I've been watching for it, From Birth to Bliss. You were co-authored that with Carolyn Miss, I think. But,
well,
where is the book? I haven't seen it.
She wrote the foreword.
Okay.
And Hay House had accepted it, and originally they were going to put it out in September. Now, June 5th.
June 5th of next year, huh?
Yes, and it's now they've changed the title to Living Bliss,
Living
Major
Bliss.
Discoveries Along the Holistic Path. But
cool.
The editing is finished. They've had it since February, but for various and sundry logistic reasons, the publication date is now June 5th.
All right. Well, I'll watch for that one. We'll make sure we get you back to the show to talk about it, too. So put that one in your calendar, Dr. Shealy.
I will do it.
Now, our goal here is to develop a clear picture as to how truly helpful and successful people like yourself have gained the success they have today, how they've broke through limitations. They've, you know, and in doing this, you know, what we attempt to do is trace a path that leads from where you were to where you are today. So to begin, please tell us a little bit about your early years. I mean, what was school like for you? Were you popular? Were you a member of a group? Were you involved in sports? Were you a loner? You know, what was the deal for the young Dr. Shealy?
Well, I started first grade at age 5, and I finished
wow.
high school at age 16. So I was sort of 2 years younger than all my classmates and a nerd. I was moderately introverted then. And then I went to college at age 16, and I went to medical school when I was 19. And I made a decision that I had to become an extrovert in order to deal with people. I knew I was too introverted. So I played the role of an extrovert. I joined a medical fraternity in medical school, and I became the bartender, even though I didn't drink until I was 21. So I acted as if I was drinking at the party, because everybody thought I was, but I wasn't. And I became an extrovert. And now when I'm tested on the Myers-Briggs, and I've been tested several times, I am quite extroverted. And by the time I finished the medical school, I was the editor of our annual yearbook and the permanent officer of our class for the last almost 60 years. So you can change your personality if you choose to.
Yeah, how cool. I mean, indeed you can. But when we both went to school, the word was you couldn't. Personality was fixed somewhere between 4 and 6 years of age, and that's just what you lived with. But today, you know, some of the best research says if you want to improve your life, change your personality. And so what you did is you made the conscious decision that I'm not going to be introverted, I'm going to be extroverted, so I'm going to just role play. I'm going to pretend I'm like acting. And as you did that, you actually changed your personality. Have I got that right?
You got it. And of course, all of this, I often say I did not have the courage to choose abusive parents. I see so many patients who felt neglected, abused, abandoned in childhood. I was probably over-nurtured by my parents, and I don't regret that at all. It's a lot better than the other way around.
Yeah.
But I was blessed with a family that encouraged me and allowed me to do what I wanted to do. I took piano lessons. I took voice lessons. Never was very much in sports until actually I finished my neurosurgical residency. I mean, I always did exercise. I did weightlifting and that kind of thing. But then I got into racquetball. I have to admit, my favorite all-time exercise is racquetball.
Racquetball. Well, that's a nice competitive one. You know, we've got a break coming up here, but when we come back from the break, I'm going to ask you how you met your wife and how your professional career began to unfold once you had, how you moved from the allopathic tradition to the non-traditional alternative practices that you have been a pioneer in leading us into. In fact, for that matter, I'm going to ask you what energy medicine is. Have you explained that? We're speaking with Dr. Norman Shealy. We'll be talking about his books. We're talking about his life right now and his work. He is indeed a genuine icon. Remember to join Ravinder and her team in the chat room. You can do that by going to provocativeenlightenment.com/chat. Do stay tuned. You don't want to miss what's coming up after a few words from some of our friends.
You're listening to Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor. Do you feel like you've become lost in a funhouse? Only seeing the reflection of yourself, past, future, and present, but unable to find the real you? I invite you to step through the doorway and onto the path leading to understanding of your mind, your choices, and the influences that surround you. Read Elton Taylor's New York Times best-selling book, Choices and Illusions, now expanded, updated, and revised. It will provide you with real-life examples of how you can break free from your current perceptions and begin your journey to how high is up. Get your copy today from all bookstores or online from Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble.
Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
You know, one of the reasons we ask the question, Dr. Sheely, about your music is because it tends to, from time to time, be somewhat self-disclosing. You know, I've used this example before, but when you have someone that's talking to you about peace and love and generosity and sharing and no such thing as evil in the world and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and then you find out that their favorite song is a country western song by Hank Williams where the train run over the dog. Okay? You kind of get a special insight. So now we just played your second choice. Forgive me if I say it incorrectly. I'm certainly not Italian. But La Donna e Mobile. So what is the significance to this one?
Oh, it's so joyous, of course. And remember I told you I took voice lessons?
Yes.
Well, the first thing I actually learned well with that particular song from Rigoletto.
Really?
If I had been an Italian tenor instead of an Irish tenor, I would have gone into opera.
Are you going to sing a little for us?
No.
No.
Never, not in public.
Okay.
Not today. Actually, I did sing at a couple of weddings of my friends when I was growing up.
Well, you know, I looked at those lyrics and I thought, what is this? What is he telling me? Now I understand, but you know the lyrics. Woman, it translated, woman is flighty like a feather in the wind. She changes her voice, her mind.
But it's not joyous.
It's joyous.
It's sort
okay.
of poking fun.
Poking fun. All right. Okay. In fun. All right. For those of you just joining us, welcome. We're speaking with Dr. Norman Sheely about his book, Life and Works. All right, sir. Before the break, I told you I was going to ask you about energy medicine. Why don't you give us a quick definition of that, and then we can talk about the transition that was necessary for you to make between the allopathic and the complementary that you have done such an incredible job at.
Well, of course, everything is energy. Even drugs and surgery are energy. But all of the alternative ways of using energy for healing or staying well are part of energy medicine. So it goes actually from anything from herbs, vitamins, and supplements, and nutrition, to physical exercise, to the laying on of hands, to all the forms of spiritual healing, acupuncture. You know, it's a wide, wide variety. In fact, I wrote a book. The biggest book I've ever written was on energy medicine, which covers all of these different approaches. And basically, I believe that 85% of illnesses are the result of unresolved stress, and that they can be prevented or treated without drugs or surgery. Now, 15% of the time, you may need drugs or surgery to save your life. But the other 85% of the time, I think you'll be better off, safer, and do well, very much better, in fact, than with drugs and surgery. And it's a question, of course, of knowing when to choose which.
And, of course, for that, you need the professional like yourself. Let's do this then. Okay, you're in college. You converted yourself. You're now extroverted in your personality. How do you meet your wife, and where does the transition between traditional medicine and energy medicine occur?
Well, the meeting my wife was interesting. I was going to Boston for my neurosurgical residency after my surgical year of residency, and I knew only one person. We had interned together, and I wrote that, "How would you like to share an apartment?" And he had a two-bedroom apartment we shared, and he was dating what became my wife. I realized very quickly after I met David and Shardy that David was Jewish, and his parents were Orthodox, and I knew he would never marry a Shikston. So I finally said, after a few months, "David, I'd like you to stop dating Charity because you'd never marry her, and I might." And so a month later, he said, "Okay, I'll stop dating her, but you can't date her for a whole month." After I quit, so fine. But nobody tells her, of course. So I started calling her almost every day. And on my birthday, December 4th, 1958, we had our first date, and December 10th, we were engaged.
Wow.
And it was unquestionably the most important and best thing I ever did in this life.
That's quite a story. So it was love at first sight?
It was, and it was true love.
That's fantastic. And you were married for how many years, sir?
52.
52 years. That's incredible. Okay, so now you're in your residency, and you've come out a traditional physician. Where does the energy come in?
Well, in my residency, the Massachusetts General Hospital was the big pain specialty place in neurosurgery. And the major treatment was chordotomy, in which we cut the front half of the spinal cord, or lobotomy, in which we essentially destroy the frontal lobes and it destroys the personality.
Right.
And in my residency, I questioned. I didn't understand whether the patients or the physicians were crazier for doing this barbaric procedure to try to control pain. So actually, when I finished, I went on the faculty at Western Reserve Medical School, but I set out to find an alternative way of controlling pain. And I spent 3 years doing pain research while I was teaching and doing clinical work as well. And I came up with the idea in 1965 that if we were to stimulate electrically the spinal cord instead of cutting it, but actually put an electrical current through it, it would control pain. And that was my first major invention, called dorsal cone stimulation. About the same time, I introduced the use of electrical stimulation on the surface of the body called TENS, or transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation. Both of them are now used worldwide.
Right.
Dorsal cone stimulation is still used, although personally I think it could rarely be used. And TENS unit, of course, is, I think almost every country in the world uses it now.
Yeah, especially every sports organization in the world, that's for sure. I've personally used TENS for, I don't know now, what, 30 years, I guess. So it's a great, great device. Let me ask you this, Doctor. You mentioned spirituality. And in our process, I mean, it sounds to me like what you have done, unlike many, is you've just had you were gifted with a great mind, and you have just had a keen purpose to help other people. So you haven't gone through that dark night of the soul, or you didn't have that experience that we hear so often, like from Joan Borisenko, where there's a tragedy and it changes her career. You worked your way. You gravitated this way through solid research. But if that's the instance, how important is something like spirituality to you?
Well, I grew up with knowing that life life is okay and that we survived death. When I was 4 years old, my grandmother was remonstrating me for something one day, and I said, "Oh, Grandma, don't worry. If you're going to die, you're going to die." To which she responded, "Well, that's true, but you could shorten your life." And so I've always had unequivocal faith and knowing that death is not the end of life. Always been interested in spirituality. I've read voraciously in the field of religion, and you know, I call religion the fight for God, but mysticism is the search for God. And so I think I've never been searching in the not knowing, but searching to understand more and to be with it. And of course, intuition has made played a very major role in my life. All of my discoveries really are the result of connection with a higher source.
So, in a sense, what you're going to say, if I'm going to use a word here that might make you uncomfortable, but I don't mean for it, it's channeled information. This is information.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty open about it. I have a guide. I actually have conversations with an angelic teacher.
Flesh that out for me. I mean, no, I love it. I love it. I mean, I have my own conversations, but please flesh that out.
Well,
do you see this guide? Is this in your head? Is this a conversation that, you know, you have in the shower? You know, tell us the story.
Okay, all of a sudden, I actually hear a voice. I mean, I'm serious, a voice. And it doesn't sound like me. And this guide calls himself an angel, and he says he's a teacher. And he calls me Norman. Everybody else called me Norm. and he'll say, "Well, Norman, if you would do this and this and this and this." And every time, Eldon, each of the rings he gave me, literally, out of the sky, so to speak. The first one, for instance, I just sat down one day and said, "What else can I do to raise DHEA, dehydroepiandrosterone?" "No," he says, "well, if you would stimulate the points that connect the kidneys with the gonads, with the adrenal glands, with the thyroid, and the pituitary through a window of the sky, it'll raise DHEA." Now, I've done acupuncture in 1967. This was in the mid-90s. And I said, "But there's no point for the pituitary." He said, "Find one." He's always that way. He doesn't always give me everything. So I got out my atlas, and I picked out the point, and I said, "Is that right?" He said, "Well, test it and find out." So I tested it, and it worked. It raised DHEA. And so I have, you know, I've got 12 patents. All of them came from him. I mean, I wasn't asked if I should put his name on the patent.
That's an incredible story. You know, I happen to have a friend who... he used to be the chair of the chemistry department at the University of Utah, Dr. William Gillory. He was also, you know, past president of the Black Chemists of America, very gifted person, Stanford graduate, Sorbonne fellow, who, you know, decided he was going to get serious about investigating physics all about the time, you know, Bohm and Pete and whatnot were talking about the holographic universe. And he began to channel information about the physical world and found his, you know, his work in physics was coming the way you're talking about your work coming, not as a result of a textbook, but as a result of asking a question and receiving that answer. But I don't think he actually heard a distinguished voice so much, although he did give his guide a name, Cameron. Does your guide have a name?
Well, I call him G for guide.
G for guide, I like it. That's the name of mine. I call my dog Dog. You know why? Okay.
Well, you know, I once said, one time, I got this brilliant image when I was out jogging one day. And I went back to my room and drew a sketch of it. And 36 hours later, the guide comes in, "Norman, where do you think that image you got yesterday came from?" I said, "I thought it was mine." He said, "I put it there. You're to work on it." And sometimes that's all he gives me. Then I have to figure out what I'm supposed to learn from it.
I like the humor, too. You know, Hermann Hesse, in his Pulitzer-winning novel, Siddhartha, discovered spirituality as a way of living every day of his life. You know, the book kind of suggests that, you know, finding our own river, so to speak, where we can live our lives fully aware of our daily duties and still totally participate in true enlightenment, that really should be our penultimate goal, if you will. Do you concur with that? Do you believe that spirituality, therefore, then, is more what your life is about than medicine, and that helping people is a part of your spirituality? Or, you know, unpack your thoughts on that for me.
Unequivocally, I believe that the number one need that we have as people is to help other people. Now, if you did not feel adequately nurtured as a child, then you may have a need to be nurtured more than to give nurturing. But even then, I can tell you, having worked with over 30,000 chronically depressed people with chronic pain, many, many, many of them would tell me, and they'd come in, so they're not working. I'd say, what do you want to do when you get well? I want to help other people. That is such a pervasive need. Now, to me, actually, I, at age 12, according to my guide, had materialized in front of my eyes the healer archetype. I saw this phenomenal woman, and I just had this urge to heal her on the spot, and never saw her again. And wow. According to my guide, that was the manifestation of the healer guide, so that it would always be with me. And I've never lost that. You know, I was on a workshop cruise, in November, and this young man, 30 years of age, came on absolutely crippled from a recent illness. And I mean, it was as if I saw that healer manifestation over again. I just had this unbelievable need, more than I do with most people, to heal him on the spot. And I'm happy to say that it's been about 5 or 6 weeks now, and I've given him a lot of things to do, and he is healing, which is very gratifying.
Yeah, I don't think you get a stronger, warm, fuzzy feeling than when you've been able to go to the aid of somebody truly in need and make a difference. But people tend to think, Dr. Sheely, that maybe you need to save a life, or you have to heal a crippled person, or, you know, you have to do something really monumental, the so-called stupendous act, in order to be contributing, in order to be, you know, providing service to our fellow mankind. I kind of see it differently than that. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, you know, I think it's just the need to help. It doesn't have to be, you know, like putting on a major fire. I just have a feeling that I would like everybody to be as healthy and happy as I've been. I mean, you know, I turned 81 this month, but I still feel 26. And I've had a truly blessed life. And I would like everybody to have that kind of life.
You are an icon to me, my friend. When you think of yourself today, how do you describe yourself then in your life's goals and ambitions, Dr. Sheely?
Well, interestingly, early this year, I donated almost everything that I own to Missouri State University. My 256-acre farm, my 11,000-square-foot research facility, and $1 million, and endowed the world's first chair of conscientious psychology, because what I see missing in our society today is individual responsibility. And so the chair of conscientious psychology is hopefully going to encourage research not in looking at people who are conscientious, but people who aren't, and teaching, training, developing tools to help them become conscientious, because we know that longevity and health and even lifelong income are dependent upon conscientiousness, being responsible, being orderly, being organized. And fortunately, my wife is one of the most conscientious people I've ever known. I'm sure you are, from what I know about you and your books that I've read. Conscientiousness is a phenomenal trait, and I believe it can be
I think that's marvelous. I just, you know, is this one we owe to G? Because I just think that's that is a fantastic idea. It's something that's, you know, altogether too much of the work in psychology is experimental. Or, you know, our social psychologists are looking at all the ways that we tick and plumbing our unconscious and, you know, coming up with dream teams to help campaigners win elections and writing scripts that have words in them that absolutely frame, you know, contentious points so that they're less contentious and more accepted. In other words, to me, so much of psychology today is about manipulation. And even in the area of positive psychology, we have a tendency, I think, to get a little, go a little overboard with the idea of self-esteem. And I think you can really, you can go too far there. You can create a culture of entitlement with some of that. Conscientious psychology, I think it's just, I mean, I applaud you.
Well, I totally agree. You know, self-esteem begins at home with the person. And my favorite statement for people, and I think I might have mentioned this perhaps at the close of the last time we talked, I'm okay because God does not create junk. And I tell people that if they've never committed murder, rape, or robbery, or harmed anyone purposefully, they don't have anything to be worried about. They're okay. It's important to know that we all go through ups and downs. Not everything is always perfect. But as long as we keep the faith, baby, as long as we know that we are doing the best we can, then I think it's okay.
I do too. You know what I tend to believe, honestly, is that self-esteem is something that you know, you gain when you go to the aid of other people. You gain true self-esteem when you realize your life matters. And your life matters, and you have that realization when you're helping other people. And it doesn't take big, you know, acts of help. It can be the small acts. And indeed, as you know, we're hardwired for that. If you just simply write a check to a charity that you genuinely care about, reward center in the brain releases endorphins, and I mean, we're just hardwired to be people who care about other people. So to me, that's where self-esteem comes from. But I'll get off my horse. This is your hour.
No, I think that horse needs to be ridden all the way.
Okay,
I you know, you're talking my language, of course. If you want to feel better, go help somebody. That's the way to feel better.
It is. It is absolutely the instance. How then, you know, everybody I've talked to in this program has had some point where they met a great deal of resistance. Maybe they became discouraged. They thought, you know, I can't do this. You had to deal with a good deal of resistance making your own transition to energy medicine, didn't you?
Well, you know, people often said it took courage. Actually, maybe I was just too stupid to find it. When I founded the American Holistic Medical Association, one of my former neurosurgical colleagues wrote an editorial in the New England Journal of Medicine criticizing the leaders of the holistic movement as being too charismatic and speaking too well. And then he said, we're too busy taking care of disease to try to prevent it. And, you know, to me, that's provincialism at its least and stupidity at its greatest. But I, I have had one major episode. In 1995, I was paralyzed when somebody from a previous life came back to get even with me. You know, I'm a pretty nice guy in this life.
Okay, now, Dr. Sheely, I want to hear this story, and we have a break coming up, and I don't want to cut you off in the middle of that story. So, I mean, you already have me, somebody from a previous life. We're going to get into that. I want to thank everybody for joining us today. If you're not already in our chat room, now's the time to get there. We have a movie of our guest today, and it's a great one. You know, it always helps us to see who it is that we're talking to. So be sure to go to provocativeenlightenment.com/chat, and there you join the people in the chat room. Just push the chat room button near the top of the page in order to join and enjoy that movie. We'll be right back after a brief station break. Thank you.
You're listening to Provocative Enlightenment with Elton Taylor.
Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
And welcome back. If you just joined us, we're chatting with Dr. Norman Sheely about his books, inventions, life, and work. But before we get back to the show, I want to invite you to join me on Facebook. I post regularly everything from where I am and what's on next to the latest in science, technology, and consciousness studies. And from time to time, some of my own opinions about the world we live in. And I love your comments and feedback, and Facebook is a great place for that. All right, back to the show. Before the break, Dr. Sheely, you were about to tell us about a past life opponent, some resistance that you ran into. Please pick that up.
Well, this physician from Canada came down to show me his hot hands. Now, I've seen healers, as I'm sure you have, who had very hot hands.
Uh-huh.
And so we talked a while. I said, show me your hot hand. And he put his hand on my head and jerked my neck 180 degrees in both directions and dislocated my spine and went back to Canada. And I had to have emergency decompression to save my life, essentially, and certainly my ability to be up and about. And I knew when it happened, it had to be karmic. I mean, things like that don't happen
right
out of the blue. But about a week later, when I'm still, you know, I'm still recovering and in a brace and my right vocal cord was paralyzed and all kinds of things, I had my joke day. I think I can truly say it's the only day in my life I have been severely depressed. And after 8 hours of moaning and groaning, I said, nonsense. If I don't stop this, I'll never get well. That was the end of my depression. But I knew that it had to be karmic, and it took me a while to figure it out, but I did. And I've had it confirmed by two other very expert intuitives. Basically, several hundred years ago, I was not a nice guy, and I had this guy murdered. And he came back and got even with me. Thank God he didn't cut my head off, but that's karma.
Interesting.
You have to deal with it.
You know, that prompts me to ask you this. Mr. G, your guide, I'll just call him Mr. G, okay?
Right.
When did Mr. G begin to visit you? While you were in medical school, when you were very young, at four, and you knew that there was life after death? I mean, how long has he been with you?
All my life, although I didn't talk to him directly until I was about 50 years old. But when I had my first out-of-body experience, it was after that I began to, you know, be, I suppose, more open to those things.
All right, let's flash back for a second. Then something you said before the break, the criticism that you received about founding an alternative way of looking at health care and the whole organization. We are too busy healing to take time, I'm paraphrasing, to take time. No, how is it we're too busy curing disease?
We're too busy taking care of sick patients to try to prevent disease.
Right, okay. Your position about that is you can prevent disease easier than you can cure disease.
Exactly. Again, I believe that 85% of diseases are preventable. percent.
85%.
Right. John Noakes wrote a wonderful article back in the 70s called Responsibility of the Individual. He said 99% of people are born healthy and become unhealthy because of human misbehavior. And it's true. Of course, that human misbehavior is not always by the individual. Unfortunately, a lot of human misbehavior is by organizations and, you know, companies and other things sometimes. But it is human carelessness and not paying proper attention both to ourselves and to the effects of things on other people that is the cause of major diseases and problems in the world.
So did you ever become discouraged at all? I mean, did you ever just think, you know, I'm swimming upstream? I mean, are you thin-skinned in any way about any of this?
Well, every once in a while, you know, it enters my mind, you know, is it worth it? But then I think there's no other choice. I don't believe in giving in, because you might as well get recycled immediately when you do that. And I've always had the reserve and the energy to just move on despite opposition. And I've never really felt opposition as a personal thing. I don't feel attacked. I don't feel neglected, abandoned, or rejected. I just keep doing what I believe is right and good for people.
You know, up until now, everyone we've spoken to is, like I say, they've gone through this place in life. Sounds to me like you've had a really gifted life. You've made it a gifted life. It isn't, you know, I mean, but you had good fortune, good parents, and so on and so forth. So was there ever a point that you just said to yourself, I've made it?
Well, I would say that even today. I would say I have been fortunate. I have been blessed. I have truly enjoyed my life. You know, a lot of people who believe in reincarnation, of course, say they want to get out of the cycle of rebirth. I enjoy life. And I keep thinking I'd like to come back as a botanist in New Zealand and just play with plants for a lifetime or two. But to me, there's too much good and pleasure not to enjoy it.
I love it. It's a winning attitude. There's no question about that. What would you do differently today then if you could do it all over? Anything?
Yeah. I would major in engineering in undergraduate school instead of zoology so that I, you know, knew a bit more of the electrochemistry and the electronics that I have to have help with. But other than that, no.
You'd enrich yourself with some mechanical abilities, okay?
Exactly.
You know, here's a guy at the top of his field. All right, I'll leave that be. I just find that humorous. You have any advice? I mean, a lot of people come into life, and maybe they don't have the best parents, and maybe they didn't have the opportunity for the best education. But they still have dreams. They still have ambitions, but they feel stuck. You have any words of advice based on your life and your experience for people in that category?
Yeah, I do say take care of yourself. I mean, you need to nurture yourself. And interesting, I just got this email today from a physician. Thank you for creating Air Bliss. It is bliss for me not to suffer anxiety anymore, and my patients love it too. I get letters like that every day from people with post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety, depression, etc. And so there are things you can do for yourself. Even if you can't afford to buy a bottle of Bliss, you can go to my website and see the points and massage them and tap them, because, you know, you can activate these points, not necessarily as well as with the oils, but you can do it with massage. And it takes, once you study the points, you can do it in about a minute or two. So you can help yourself and take advantage of programs like this. I mean, you are, of course, helping people just as well as I. In fact, I believe that everything that does anything that people can find useful, and I don't care if it's a janitor or a plumber, they're just as important as you and I are. As long as you're doing something that helps people and makes life better, you are contributing to humanity.
I so totally agree with that. I have to tell you, and maybe you heard the setup piece coming in, I use your bliss for performance anxiety. I still panic when I'm about to get up in front of a few hundred or a few thousand people. So for some reason, you know, you get those small groups, 20, 30, it's okay. But you get the big group where it should be easier, it is. And I don't know what happens in my head, but it's incredibly fast and incredibly effective bliss. Thank you for sending that to me, Dr. Sheely.
Hey, I'll have to send you another bottle for Christmas.
Oh, hey, I love it. I would love it. I'll take anything you come up with. Do you believe, sir, that everyone can achieve the kind of success that you have? Or is it just, I mean, is that kind of success left for just a few?
Well, I think everything is related to everything. And, of course, just as my experience with the paralysis with karmic, I think your success in life is really what you've been prepared through many lifetimes as well as through this lifetime. And so if you haven't felt successful, then you just keep on until you do.
All right. I think we have a picture of Dr. Norman Sheely and Mr. G., and his past life opponent, who's gone back to Canada, I assume, right? And your contribution, your attitude. So let's do this. Let's now turn to your work. You basically indicate that there are choices that people have to make in order to determine their own health and happiness. Outline what you mean by that. What are those choices?
Well, I think every time you do anything, you have a choice. Whether to go to bed and sleep, when to get up, what to eat, when to exercise, what to do. And to me, the choice is always to do the thing that is, first of all, going to be healthy for you. I mean, I don't do unhealthy things. I don't eat junk food. I do exercise 60 to 90 minutes every day. The choice to me is making a choice to do what you know unequivocally is healthy. Then you have the energy to help other people.
You know, it can be kind of a confusing world out there today, especially when you start talking about, you know, the foods that you eat and making those healthy choices. We all know, despite what my lovely bride said about her donuts laced with vitamins, that junk food isn't something we want to eat. But, you know, with all the issues of genetically modified organisms and like corn, for example, really, I don't think you can buy corn that's not GMO today. With all those kinds of issues, where do you tell people to go to find the information they need for the healthy choices?
Well, I tell them to go to books for people like you, to go to websites like yours and mine. I tell them, whenever possible, to buy food that is raised by local farmers and that you know to be healthy. And when you can't, don't worry about it.
So here's a point that I wanted to go to, and you just gave me the perfect entree. Thank you very, very much. It's not what you put into your mouth, but what issueth from your mouth that will condemn you. That's a loose translation from, you know, all versions of the Bible, King James, Wycliffe, Tillman, etc. How important is your attitude with regard to what you consume? I mean, if you if you have an attitude, and let's just take, you know, a prayerful attitude. If you have a prayerful attitude, an attitude of gratitude, that's what I think of as a prayerful attitude. Thank you for the food that I'm about to, you know, partake of, etc. If you have that, does that make a difference?
Oh, absolutely. And everything is attitude. The choices that you make are your basic attitude. The choices you make about life in every aspect is attitude. You know, I'm not sure that Legal was the first to say it, but it is reported that he said, "I reckon a person is about as happy as he makes up his mind to be." And so I think one should make up one's mind to be happy.
Right. Okay. Your website offers a lot of aids. I guess that's the way I'm going to put it. And they range from, you know, recommendations, and many of which I'm very grateful to you for, by the way. I do them myself, and I've seen that they make a big difference. But they range from recommendations that deal with very specific kinds of physical conditions to programs that are designed to be supporting and therefore just a helpful side of things. Tell us about your website and what it is that you try to do with it.
Well, first and foremost, I think that for the kind of thing particularly that you just mentioned, there's a link there called Optimal Health. And in there, I have actually published, and I revise it about once a year, a huge number of recommendations for specific problems like cholesterol or menopause or cancer or whatever. So there are my holistic alternative recommendations under Optimal Health. Of course, I have my free email newsletter that comes out at least once a week and most times several times a week. Those are the most important things. In my store, we offer a lot of supplements that I personally recommend. And we have the archive of my newsletters that go back about 10 or 12 years.
And you can spend hours on the site. I did. I happened to, you know, have triple bypass surgery about 6 years ago now, and I had the good fortune of having good surgeons here, good cardiac care, and a pretty rapid recovery. But I had the opportunity to speak with Dr. Sheely, and my wife engaged in a dialogue following that and tailoring a healthcare program. And I'll tell you now, my cardiac care people, you know, the last time they put me on a treadmill for the nuclear stress test, you know all about,
mm-hmm.
They told me, you know, you got a heart of a 30-year-old. So, you know, I guess that's my way of really letting our listeners know that I strongly support your efforts, your work. I have a personal history with it. And I would encourage you all to go to Norm Sheely, that's NormSheely, NormSheely.com, subscribe to the newsletter, etc. Okay, now listen, Dr. Sheely, sir, you are a very happy person. You have shared that with us. We know that. You love life so much that, like myself, you want to come back. I don't want to be a botanist in New Zealand, though. Okay. Now, there are other choices that you make in life that feed your happiness. Some of them have to do just with the way you get through your day. I know that you say you're exercising 60 to 90 minutes a day. How organized are you?
I'm pretty organized. I've taken the conscientiousness test 3 times, and I range from 98% to 99%. So, you know, I was a Boy Scout. Be prepared. I think I've always been pretty organized.
How important do you think that is, both to your health and to your success, to be, you know, organized so that you really can fit what you need to fit into a day and at the same time move forward every day with your goals, your ambitions?
Well, actually, I think it's the single most important factor because it allows you then to live a less hectic life. If you're not organized, things get pretty out of control sometimes. I can't imagine just not schedule. But, you know, I live a calendar. But I'm happy doing that. I don't feel pressured in it. It just makes me feel prepared.
Who do you think? I mean, you know, for most people out there, the world acts on them. Life sucks and then you die. We've all seen that bumper sticker. Somebody cuts in front of somebody in 5 o'clock traffic and you see horns go off and fingers wag and da-da-da-da-da. Who do you think determines happiness? Is that the Lord in the sky, you know, sending cars in front of you, or where does a person's happiness come from, Doc?
It's all an inside job. I really believe that. It is your personal decision to be happy and to take challenges as they are. I don't know how much you pay attention to astrology, but I've always been fascinated. I don't think you control this, but it does influence us. And interestingly, do you know about the North Node?
Yeah, I do. Go on. Flesh that out, though, for everybody.
Yeah. Well, the North Node is your greatest challenge in this life.
Right.
And interestingly, when I read my North Node, my greatest challenge has been being able to express my personal emotions in public. I now do that very well, but I can tell you, 20 years ago, it was still not easy for me to talk about these personal things.
That's interesting. So you would suggest to everybody that they go find out what their weakness is? Is that the message I've got there?
Oh, absolutely. I often, for my friends, I have a software package that is actually used by a lot of astrologers, and I often do the chart for them and tell them, study this and this and this. If you know the sun, the moon, and the rising sign and your north node, you get a pretty good understanding of your personality.
I've always thought about astrology kind of like a template, a matrix that, you know, there is some relevance to, but there's a whole lot of misconception about. But when you mention astrology the way you do, do you ever just talk this freely, like you and I are having a conversation with fellow MDs at, you know, AMA meetings?
Well, I haven't been invited to speak about that at a county medical society.
Well, I know, but would you just, I mean, with your friends, I mean, I know that I put two different hats on, and maybe I shouldn't, but I will admit to that. With APA colleagues, I tend to be more disciplined about discussions of some of these things. And so I guess, you know, I would not be saying, well, have you looked at your North Node to see what your opportunities are? You understand what I'm saying.
Indeed, I do. No, at a scientific meeting, I would not do that. But with my friends and the people who are in the holistic movement, obviously we discuss things like that.
Yeah, one of the things that I love about you, of course, Dr. Shealy, is your openness, your candor, and I really enjoy and appreciate our relationship, our ability to have this conversation on the air for all the listeners out there. You really get to meet this man, know this man, and that's something that I really have enjoyed doing this Breaking Limitations series. I believe, sir, and have taught for some 30 years, a four-corner philosophy that is essentially, in one word, forgive, gratitude, self-responsibility, and service. How important do you think self-responsibility is?
Absolutely key. Be key to life and happiness. No question.
Flesh that out some. I mean, are you responsible for the things that happen to you in the world, or are you just responsible for how you respond?
No, you're not responsible for the people pulling in front of you or the guy jerking your neck or whatever. You are responsible for your attitude towards it when it happens. And you can't afford the luxury of anger, guilt, anxiety, or depression. That's wallowing in manure. And to me, instead of wallowing in manure, you need to wash it off, pour in a little rose oil, and move on.
little rose oil. That's how you wash it off.
Well, as a matter of fact, I use white rose oil every day of my life, and I have for at least half of my life. Back in the 70s, I read a wonderful book on irritation by Torkin Seredarian, and one of the antidotes he mentioned was roses. Well, you can't carry roses around with you, but you can use rose oil. And so my intent, when I put a few drops of rose oil in my hand and rub it on my solar plexus, is that this rose oil is going to protect me from other people's anger.
Wow, I like that. You have rose oil on your website?
I do, white rose oil.
White rose oil. All right. You got that down, Ravinder. Go get some white rose oil.
I've already got it written down.
All right. We have to go to a break again. We hope you're enjoying our show today with Dr. Norman Shealy and our discussion about his approach to health and wellness, happiness, his work, his books, his life. You can visit his website to learn more by going to www.normshealy.com. We'll be back in just a minute. After a few words from some of our friends, do stay tuned.
We are all very aware of the power of belief, but are you aware that many times it is your inner beliefs that cause you to sabotage your own dreams and goals? Success is so much more likely when your inner beliefs are in line with your outer goals. And now, using Eldon Taylor's InnerTalk technology, you can do just this. InnerTalk is a patented subliminal technology and is the only such technology to be researched by numerous independent universities and institutions, including Stanford, and been demonstrated effective at priming your self-talk. There are hundreds of titles to choose from, ranging from weight loss to esteem, organized and efficient to prosperity and abundance, attracting the right love relationship to winning sports performance, accelerated learning to accelerated healing. Eldon Taylor's patented InnerTalk technology is your key to success. Check it out today. Visit www.innertalk.com. That's InnerTalk.com. InnerTalk.com.
Unlock the power of your mind. This is Provocative Enlightenment with Eldon Taylor.
And welcome back. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Dr. Norman Shealy about his books, Life and Work. We'll take your phone calls in this half hour, so if you have questions for our guests, either give us a call or submit your questions in our chat room. Ravinder and her team, Andrea and Jana, are there to put your questions forward. All right, now, Dr. Shealy, that was your third choice of music that we just played, and you know the lyrics again. I do not go to church, but I pray a lot to the Lord. Tell us why this song is important to you.
Oh, it's that whole opera, La Boheme. I love opera, the Lord said, but La Boheme is my favorite. And the whole Mimi, and I mean, I just love Mimi in that opera. It speaks to me, the lyrics, the beauty of the sound.
Do you speak Italian, sir?
Oh, heavens no.
Oh, okay.
In fact, I prefer hearing opera in Italian. I don't want to have to think about the words. I want to feel them.
I see. Okay.
But I know the story, of course.
Uh-huh.
And I know what's going on, but I don't have to sit there and think about the meaning. I can just absorb the music.
So the words have nothing to do with it. It's really your participation in the music and your enjoyment in opera that gives rise to these two last choices.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. So it's not that the poor woman is being made fun of, and or
no. It's the music. You know, it's the music itself. I mean, music to me almost all music. I don't like acid rock, but almost all music, of course, is gorgeous.
I was just jesting, you know. It's not the country western. all right, sir.
But
listen.
The lyrics are so beautiful.
I love opera, too. Unfortunately, unless I've got my computer with me, I'm unable to translate much. So what I have to do is, you know, access the story in advance, see if I can't, you know, get a good grip of what's going on, who the actors or the players are, and then try and make that fit with what I'm watching when I'm, you know, I'm actually there in the opera house. But it's not music that I think of, I guess, firsthand as being my favorite. But then I never planned on being Mario Alonso, I guess. Dr. Sheely, you spoke earlier about some things that I want to come back now and ask you about very specifically. For example, you were talking about if someone couldn't afford Bliss, that they could go to your website, they could see the points where you apply Bliss, and if they couldn't do that, well, maybe they could tap. Tapping is a thing out there. There's lots of folks out there tapping. I've taken tapping on firsthand myself. I'm not a fan of tapping. I've interviewed people that tell me, well, it's connected to the meridian system, and I've interviewed the more prominent people out there in front of everybody today, and they say, well, no, I don't think it has anything to do with that because their tapping procedure doesn't follow a meridian system. So with that much of an introduction, am I out to lunch? Is tapping viable? How does it work? Or is this, you know, the psychology to it I get. Don't get me wrong. I understand how NLP works. I've used a lot of hypnosis. So I understand the psychology of it. If you expect it, that whole thing. But the actual physical mechanism, that's what I'm asking you about, sir. Is tapping viable as an energy medicine?
Unequivocally. And you know, this is, calling it tapping is a recent phenomenon, but acupressure has been around for centuries.
Okay, the acupressure, I totally agree with. I totally concur with that. But the new...
Any way you activate the point is activating the point. And, you know, needles work, electrical stimulation on the surface works, the oils work. Some are slightly more effective than others. But I have actually tested this, that, you know, although I could say that using electrical stimulation with 54 to 78 billion cycles per second is very effective, more so than putting in a needle, I could say that putting the oils is as effective, and both are slightly more effective than putting a needle in. But tapping, and again, it tapping is only one way of doing it. You could just rub it and massage it.
But I guess... where I'm going, and maybe I didn't make myself clear, or maybe I did, and I'm just all wet, so I mean, and I will pass your power here. We had, for example, a fellow on the show. I'm going to just leave his name out for the moment because I don't want to place you in that. But we had a fellow on the show that essentially told us it's not about meridians. So you're not tapping the meridian. It doesn't need to be that. You can tap for money. You can tap for, you know, anything that you desire. You just tap yourself three times on the hand, or you tap yourself four times on the forehead, or, you know, some such thing. It does not follow any acupressure. I'm thoroughly familiar with the meridian system, the chakra, energy centers, etc. It does not follow any of that. It is just, a tap anywhere or a tap somewhere that is not. And that's what I'm asking. Can you tap for money? Can you just tap your way into whatever?
Well, I think now, you know, you're talking about something totally different. Let's face it. There are ways of influencing personality or beliefs and feelings and enhancing the placebo effect. Remember, placebo average is 35% effectiveness.
Right.
And so,
make it an injection, and it's up there around 70% now.
Yeah. And if you believe, it helps. When I talk about tapping the ring, I'm talking about tapping specific points to activate, it's not a meridian as much as it is a specific point on a meridian. For instance, with the Ring of Air, I've got a description on my website that tells you where the points are. And just tapping any old where and expecting it to raise your oxytocin is not going to work.
While we're on that subject, I've got a friend who was trained in Western medicine, graduated from Tulane, MD, who's also from China and practices Oriental medicine. And she's been an important healthcare provider to me. And we have talked about a lot of things, acupressure, acupuncture, qigong, and so on and so forth. But I've never heard her say, you can use the meridian system to manifest money.
I'm not talking about that either. When I call it tapping, I'm not talking about indiscriminate tapping.
Okay,
I'm talking about activating specific acupuncture points.
All right, you're talking
Napoleon
about.
Hill. We're not
Go
talking
ahead.
Napoleon Hill. Remember,
okay.
Napoleon Hill, think and grow rich.
Right. Well, actually, I think Napoleon Hill did a service with his book because there's a lot of good in what he teaches.
Well, that's right.
But this idea that, I can tap myself to riches, all I have to do, I shell out, $300 or $1,000 to go to this seminar, and I tap in money or I tap in a new relationship, a lover, I just go, whoa, wait a minute.
That's
Barnum
oil.
And Bailey. What did he say? P.T. Barnum
yep.
said there's one born every minute,
every
I
second.
Think. Yeah, every second.
Whatever. That's what I call nonsense, of course. I don't think that's over the hill. I'm with you on that one.
All right. Okay.
So let's say planned, organized, conscientious massage, physical activation of the acupuncture point can work.
Right. I totally concur. Great. All right, sir. We've got some questions out of our chat room. Let's go to that. Janet would like to know what you would recommend for low progesterone levels, natural versus pill form.
Well, unequivocal natural and unequivocal on the skin. We have a progesterone cream that's made by the people who made it for John Lee, the great expert on progesterone. It's absorbed through the skin, gets to the organs before it goes through the liver. When you take it by mouth, it goes through the liver first, and half of it is destroyed before it ever has a chance to do anything. So I strongly prefer natural, and under no circumstance, the artificial progesterone or the progestin.
Okay. Next question, again, out of our chat room. Question is it possible to reverse a thyroid condition to become a synthyroid?
Well, I have had people, I think, to overcome hypo, underactive thyroidism, you probably need two things. First of all, it's some iodine. Because 80% of people are deficient in iodine. So I would take one iodorol pill a week. That's 12.5 milligrams of iodine. One a week. And I would stimulate the Ring of Fire. Again, you can find those. It's right on the front page when you open my website, The Sacred Ring. And I have had many people be able to wean themselves. Now, if the thyroid's been removed, are destroyed by radioactivity, then obviously you're not going to activate it again.
Okay, so what you're saying is it is possible to reverse that condition.
Absolutely. Got many
okay.
people.
Mark asked this question. What do you think of neuro-emotional technique, NET? He says he's gotten great results. Is that, where do you go with that?
I'm sorry, I missed that one.
Neuro-emotional technique.
NET. I think it is a useful technique. It's one that I do actually discuss it briefly in my book, Energy Medicine. Definitely.
Go ahead, sir.
Well, you were about to say of all the techniques?
Yes, there I was. Of all of the techniques that you speak about in your book, and it's a great book, what do you come down to as being the better techniques? I mean, you certainly have to be thinking that there's a good, better, best.
Yeah. Good, best, superior is past life therapy. I've often said 1 hour of good past life therapy is better than 50 years of conventional psychotherapy. I have done hundreds and hundreds of them, and I think you can make phenomenal improvement with a session of past life therapy.
Now, Dr. Sheely, when you do past life therapy, are you using hypnosis, or is this how are you doing past life therapy?
No, it's the patient, the individual is in what I call a state of reverie. Mm-hmm. I've done hundreds of them. Only one person was amnesic for what she had said during the time. So she wasn't in hypnotic trance, but most of them are not. They recall every minute of it. I always record them so that we can listen back if needed. But I just put the patient into a relaxed state, and then I guide them, and I get them into a visualization state around, et cetera, et cetera. And then all of a sudden they say, okay, now, at the count of three, allow your ever-conscious mind to take you back to life you've lived before that has meaning to you in terms of your pure life. 1, 2, 3, and they're there.
Yeah.
And they go there, and they suddenly see themselves in a different body, a different time, and most of the time they remember every minute of it.
Is this something that is in the offer that you've made available during this show?
I think it's there. I'd have to look up the package.
Ravinder.
I have the information right here on your on the package that you're offering just to our listeners, and this sounds really good. The meditations you've got included here are balancing emotions, forgiveness and blessing, basic will, internal will, and transcendent will, loving meditation, pain relief, rainbow energy balancing, way of the sea, wise person attunement, and basic Schultz autogenic training.
Okay, it is not in there.
But we would find it on your website.
Yes.
Okay. So you have a past life meditation on the website that people could, they could experience this for themselves. And you say 1 hour of that is worth 100 hours of psychotherapy.
Absolutely.
Place to begin. That's what you say. That's the most powerful modality. That's a place to begin.
No question. No question about it. Now, it has to be somebody who knows how to do it. Dennis,
okay.
I had a session back in 1974 with Dennis Kelsey, who at the time was one of the leading past life therapists in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that one hour on his couch was equal to 18 months of psychotherapy with anyone. Well, I say it's much more than that. It's just so powerful. And you know who the best living past life therapist is? Morris Netherton.
Who?
And Morris Netherton. And he's not too far from you. He lived in Palm Springs.
Well, that's quite a ways from me. I'm over in Washington State. Palm Springs, Florida, you mean?
No, Palm Springs, California.
Oh, Palm Springs, okay, I went to Florida, all right, so I'm thinking that's quite a ways from me, but all right, no, that's not so far after all, is it? Okay. Let's do this, Dr. Shealy. You've talked a lot about reincarnation. So whenever you examine the notion of reincarnation, you've also talked about karma. You have to look at, you know, where it comes from, this whole, originally it's a Hindu, or not, yeah, it is a Hindu, not a Buddhist, a Hindu philosophy, where we've got moksha, escape from the rebirth, which you've talked about. You don't want to really escape. We've got dharma, you know, the path that we come into, and we've got karma. But all of this speaks of the world as though it is an illusion. It is, and what we seek to do is escape the illusion. So flesh that out for us, huh? How do you relate to that concept?
I think it is impossible, and I have to say that is the one that is, to me, more mysterious than anything. In fact, you know, I wrote a little book called Pointing Wisdom for the Soul, which is really an allegorical description of a person that is real. It's a real life story, but I made it an allegory. And this lady and a lot of people believe that none of this is real. It is all illusion. I have to say, I can't see that. I can't feel that. I do feel that this is a very physical reality. But I could be wrong.
I beg your pardon?
I could be wrong.
Yeah. Couldn't we all? But all right. So it's not an illusion. Tangent, if you will, to this whole proposition is that, you know, we create the world according to our thoughts, you know. So if we remain positive and we don't think about any negative, then there will be no negative. Indeed, I once commented on a tragedy that was going on in a foreign country, and I received a letter from someone that he essentially said, as long as my What is it? How is it when? As long as my sheets, as long as I have clean sheets
and a full belly.
Yeah, as long as I have
good
clean
food on my table.
I'm a happy camper. I don't care about what's going on in the world. So I'm going to ask you now, what's your position on that? I mean, do you think that, you know, there is no such thing as evil in the world?
I have to admit that I think there is evil. There is darkness, and there's good and light. To me, evil is purposeful harm of other people.
Right.
Rape, murder, robbery, that's evil. I don't condone it. I think it's a serious error in judgment on the part of people who are doing it. And I think they will have to come back in some life and pay the price for the karma.
So, would it be fair to say that you do believe that there are some absolute virtues, some things that are just wrong, irrespective of the culture you're brought up in?
Absolutely. Okay. Murder, rape, harm.
Yeah, I've had many conversations with some of the, forgive me, so-called New Age gurus who essentially want to argue that if that's how you're raised, that's you know, what you know. Let's take, for example, the Pakistani man who cut the ears and nose off of his 14-year-old bride because she failed to please him, that, you know, that's okay. I mean, after all, he doesn't know any better, and I have taken great exception to that.
I'm with you all the way. By the way,
yes, sir.
I'm sending Ravinder right now the link to multi-level awareness. Would you like to add that to the package?
Oh, we'd love to. Multi-level awareness.
That's my technique for past life therapy.
Wow, cool.
So that gets added in then. So run through the package again real quick.
It's gone from my computer as we speak.
Great. Run through the package again real quick, like Raph.
Hang on, I just lost my page. Okay, so you get balancing emotions, forgiveness and blessing, basic will, internal will, and transcendent will, Laughing meditation, that sounds like a cool one for me. Pain relief, rainbow energy balancing, way of the sea, wise person attunement, again, that's one that I want, and the basic Schultz autogenic training. So this has a value of $185. It's being offered right now just for $97. And now Dr. Sheely has just said he will add in the past life regression. So sounds really wonderful to me.
Yeah, one for me.
Just go to provocativeenlightenment.com. You can click on the special offers, or you can click on the chat room, because I have the information in both places there, and you'll see the link to get your set.
Dr. Sheely, as always, it has been a great pleasure to visit with you. You are truly, and I mean this sincerely, one of my icons, have been for some time. I have a great admiration for your courage, for your work, and I'm truly honored to have you share as openly as you have with all of us today. And with that, go ahead, sir, real quick.
It is mutual. It is mutual, Elder.
Oh.
We are doing good.
Now, that humbles me. I love you, sir. All right. On that, we've come to the end of another episode of Provocative Enlightenment. And I want to thank our special guest and all of you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed our show, and we'll join us again next week, same time and same place. And do tell your friends. Let's have them join us as well. If you have someone that you care about that missed today's show, be sure you get in the archives. Be sure you check the site. All right, until next time, wherever you are in the world, remember, believing in yourself always matters.
Provocative Enlightenment has been brought to you by Progressive Awareness Research and other sponsors. Provocative Enlightenment is a syndicated show and appears on other networks. For a schedule of show times, visit provocativeenlightenment.com. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor, write to Eldon at eldontaylor.com.